Hello, and welcome to Drinking the Kool-Aid. This is a podcast dedicated to the mysterious. My name is Cassidy.
My name's Amanda. Was that good?
That was great.
Okay,
great. I just don't know what else to say.
You say it's almost my birthday.
It is almost your birthday. Well, it's not almost my birthday. It's almost Amanda's birthday.
It's almost my birthday. When this podcast comes out, my birthday will be in like 4 days.
I thought your birthday was... Oh, your birthday's on a Sunday. That's right.
Sunday, the 23rd. Yeah.
So soon.
I know.
What a time to be alive.
What are you going
to
get me?
My eternal love and support.
It's pretty good.
I wanted to get you some really cool roller skates.
That is not happening for the next 20 years.
All of the TikTok teens have bought out every roller skate place in the fucking continental United States.
Fuck you, TikTok teens.
We know you did this to us on purpose.
Honestly, they're going to be sold out for the next 20 years, and then I'll be like 50 and I will be too old to be roller skating.
So. You're never too old to be doing anything.
Well, if I have like a bad hip.
Well, why do you have a bad hip? You haven't been roller skating.
I already have a bad hip. I have a bad everything.
From what?
From life. I'm like...
Just from existing?
Yes.
It's almost spooky Halloween Town time.
Halloween Town?
Halloween Town time.
I love Halloween so fucking
me
much.
Me too. I actually watched Halloween Town at the beginning of the quarantine because I was depressed and it made me feel better.
It's so good. It's like too good, actually. Marnie.
Oh, beautiful work by the whole cast. Oscar worthy.
There is a Halloween Town. Did you know that? Like, you could go and see the pumpkin.
What? Where?
I don't remember.
I just almost drooled because I was so excited.
Okay, first of all, my actual dream, like, something I really, really, really want to do, and maybe, you know what? I'm just going to put it out there. For my birthday, if everyone just Venmos me some money, me and Cassidy can go take a trip to Salem, Massachusetts, and go on the Hocus Pocus tour.
If everybody...
That's all I want to do.
If everyone Venmos Amanda $3 each, every single one of our
$3?
Listeners...
Okay.
We would have more than enough to go and cover our trip.
You know what? Don't even put a price on it. Let them Venmo whatever.
You know what? If you're feeling generous...
$100, you know, $500, who knows? Whatever. Whatever you feel like I deserve.
If Elon Musk has found this podcast and decides to...
Elon, are you listening?
Elon... Listen, we know you need to get out of the house. I'm sure Grimes is driving you crazy.
Elon.
You can come with.
Elon, we agree with you about the Matrix.
Elon, we're on your level.
We're on board.
Use some of that dirty apartheid money and get us over to Salem.
We like dirty money. It's fine.
You know who goes to Salem all the time? Our friend Thunder Moon Taro.
Cassidy. She was just in my brain.
Same brain.
At this, like, literally in my brain probably 5 seconds before you said her name. So I knew.
Same brain.
But I didn't even know.
You didn't even know, but you knew.
That's magic right there.
It is. I mean, I like the idea that everything ends with someone giving us money.
Oh, 100%. No matter what.
As someone who always needs money. I don't even have a functioning car at the moment. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If everyone could just Venmo me one piece of a car, I could...
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
I could build a car.
That's a great idea.
Like, if somebody gets, like, one tire...
A bumper.
Somebody Venmos me a bumper. Somebody Venmos me, like, half of an engine. Oh, my God. Imagine.
My sunglasses. My FabFitFun box.
FabFitFunbox.
No, we're not going to give them free.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, contact us if you want us to talk about how much we love you.
Yeah, pay for us and we'll tell people how much we love you because we both have FabFitFun.
We literally do. And we keep forcing our friends to get them.
I know. We're so amazing at like getting people to buy shit.
Guerrilla marketing.
Oh, God.
If only
mine
they
got
realized.
Shipped today, actually.
Mine got shipped today, too. Okay, shh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fuck you, FabFitFun. I'm just kidding.
FabFitFun, you fucking suck.
Now Venmo me.
Venmo me. FabFitFun, Venmo me and I'll tell people how much we love you.
People are like, shut the fuck up.
This episode is just going to be called Venmo me.
Venmo me. I know it's a joke, but like, just do it ironically, like as a joke.
Yeah, it's such a joke. We don't actually want money.
It's a joke. It'd be so funny if you sent it though, like as part of the joke. How fucking cool is the We Are Horror released their first magazine today?
I fucking know.
So cool. Big fans. If you guys haven't checked them out yet, they're like a all-inclusive horror magazine. They have a Patreon. It's super cheap to get like multiple issues. check them
out.
Sign up
to our Patreon first.
Obviously. Priorities. And then also Venmo's $100. Anyway. But no, they're really cool. I mean, we had Tyler on episode 15, and ever since then, we've been having like a total love bomb effect on Twitter between all of us. It's been awesome.
Yes. So Tyler was on episode 15 where we talked about the paranormal.
Where we ruined his life.
We literally ruined his life and everyone else's.
Haunted the hell out of his house.
And yeah, he has this fucking dope ass magazine, a dope ass website, and just dope.
Just dope. He works with Kim and John, who I'm a little obsessed with.
Nightmare
on Film Street. I'm a little bit obsessed with them. They're just such a cute couple, first of all. Their wedding was so gothic and adorable.
I love that.
She's the queen of selfies.
I love that.
They have a pug.
Love that.
Yeah.
What's the pug's name?
The pug's name is Matilda.
That's not even a horror movie.
But it's cute and spooky.
I love Matilda. That movie's amazing. Oh, it's a cute pug.
We've been vibing this week. Fucking vibing.
Fucking vibing. Fucking feeling good. Fucking, you know.
Asking for Venmos.
Asking for all the Venmos. I'm sweating my freaking ass off right now.
It's so hot, dude. It's so hot.
It's like 83 degrees.
That's too hot.
Legitimately 83. I was going to say 103, but yeah.
Know what I think that calls for?
More alcohol?
I was going to say rosé.
Rosé?
All right, so we got some rosé.
We got.
Should we cheers?
Some rosé. Wait.
What?
Yeah, we can cheers.
You want to boomerang it, don't you?
No, I don't.
Oh.
So the other day, you know CoStar, that app?
Oh, the astrology app? Yeah.
It told me not to do clinking glasses the other day.
Okay, then we won't clink.
So I don't know.
Should I look at mine to see if we should be clinking? To see if there's no clinking allowed? Don't. Cement, phone booths, and focus. Don't focus. That's easy.
Don't focus.
Do sailboats, belief, and thistle.
Thistle? I have
do sailboats. What am I, a fucking millionaire? Get out of here.
So mine says do puns, pawns, and camouflage. And it says don't. And this one scares me because I don't know what I'm supposed to do about this.
What?
Don't lavender, night, and beauty sleep. What am I supposed to do about that?
You stay the fuck awake, bitch.
It's gonna be night.
Time for a bender.
All right, we're gonna cheers.
Time
fucking
for a bender.
Cheers. I clinked that glass. What is that taste?
It's oaky.
That is not what I expected that to taste
me
like.
Me either at all. It smells like straight vodka.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Why? How is that rosé?
Did we get tricked?
I don't know.
Is this diet lemonade with vodka? Diet pink lemonade?
Wait, I'm really confused.
With an oaky afterbirth?
How is this rosé?
So hold your nose and drink it, bitch. Got it on sale.
How is that why?
I don't know. The guy at your liquor store is the one who recommended it to me.
He recommended this?
He literally said, oh, this one you're getting is kind of expensive. The other one is on sale because we accidentally bought too much of it. You should go buy it, and it's $8 cheaper. And I was like, is it as good? And he goes, it's just as good. It's usually more expensive, but we bought too much of it, so it's on sale.
He tricked your ass.
He tricked me.
Wow. Now you know, kids, you can trick Cassidy into buying anything. As long as you tell her it's on sale.
I'm still going to drink it.
It is gross. I mean, I'll drink it too, but whoa. This is not rosé.
I wish I had some Mio to put in it. That would be good.
What is that?
That's like that stuff you put in water to make it flavored.
Is that why that one girl's podcast is called Bring the Mio?
Maybe, probably.
I never knew what Mio was.
People will also like put it in vodka to make it like flavored vodka because there's no sugar in it.
That's probably what it means then.
Yeah. I do want to throw it out there that...
No, don't do it.
Oh, fine, fuck you.
I'm just kidding, tell me. I just feel like I took a shot of
vodka. No, I don't even want to tell you.
Tell me. I just feel like I took a shot of vodka, so I'm...
I was just going to compliment you.
Oh, yeah, please.
That's what I thought. Amanda was just so good at speaking in German the last episode that we literally got like 30 new German listeners.
Is that why?
I mean, I don't actually think that's why. I mean, maybe. I don't know. But literally, it felt like overnight, I was checking our statistics, and we had like one listener in Germany. And then after the last episode, we had like 30. So I wonder if like that one guy was like, hey, this is so funny. They're talking about I'm the small white snowman.
Our one German listener was like, Amanda can fucking speak German.
Hey, if that was you, we love you.
And he got or she got all of Germany.
All 30 people who live in Germany.
Everyone that was at the Oktoberfest restaurant.
It is not October.
I'll fucking kill you.
I'll fucking kill you. Wow, this rosé is not good for us. Our friendship might end tonight, and that'll make the podcast very awkward.
It really would.
Mortal Enemies with Cassidy and Amanda. We'll have to rename it.
Oh, yeah. It could be interesting, actually.
People would probably like it. Yeah. We wouldn't like it.
No.
But they'd like it.
How would we continue a podcast if we got into a big fight? Probably couldn't do it.
If we got into a big fight? I mean, we've never had a fight that lasted more than a day or two.
Yeah, we have fought a lot, so I feel like we're probably safe.
We've had some pretty big fucking blowouts, but the thing is, I'm really aggressive. Mm-hmm. So I'll usually be like, hey, what the fuck's going on? Are you still mad at me? And she'll be like, yes. And I'll be like, okay, tell me why. And then she'll go off on me and I'll be like, do you feel better? And she'll be like, yes.
I think it's because, I don't have a sister. I mean, I have half sisters, but I don't have, a real sister. I feel like you're just, my sister. And I feel like that's how sisters probably fight, is what I would assume.
Yeah, you're just really mad at each other. You yell at each other and then you go get lunch.
Yeah. I'm ready to throw down.
It's going down for real.
I don't know. This fucking vodka rosé that we have, I don't fucking know what it is.
It was so cheap too.
I'm upset.
It was literally $10 because it was on sale from $28 or something.
I can literally, it's okay. Just for everyone at home, it's probably 7 inches from my face and I can smell it.
Yeah, I can smell it too.
It's far away from me and I can still smell it.
Yeah, I have it at arm's length. Yeah. I can smell it.
Rubbing alcohol, flowery.
Eddie, why'd you do this to us?
Eddie.
Cheers. Ugh, wow.
Oh, my God. It's bad.
Don't drink that, guys.
It's really bad.
It tastes weirdly like a crayon.
It does taste like a crayon. Thank
you. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Oh. You have something good. I can see it in your eyes.
Did you see everyone thought that the Annabelle doll broke out?
What?
She didn't. But everyone online thought she did because somebody went on the Wikipedia and changed it and said that she broke out.
Shut up. Can you get in trouble for that?
No.
Oh, because I paid for Wikipedia the other day.
Oh, I pay for Wikipedia too.
Yeah.
I donate monthly.
Yeah, I donated because they kind of yelled at me.
They're really good at shaming people into donating.
They did. They said, sorry that we've put this message up on the top of your page for the last 7 times, but we just noticed that you're always on Wikipedia. So if you want to keep us going, give us money.
I'm poor as shit. So I donate $3 a month.
Maybe if they were Venmo me, it's my birthday.
They should have just been did you even know it's my birthday? It's Wikipedia's birthday. No, somebody went on there and changed it. And obviously it got fixed pretty quickly because Wikipedia is actually really good at fixing stuff like that. But not before people got, yeah, I heard that too. What was that?
I don't know.
It's going down for real. Not before, of course, people got screenshots of it and started tweeting about it. And then
that's terrifying. I'm sure you saw, I want to see
the BuzzFeed Unsolved Shane and Ryan, aka our future best friends. Shane had taunted the doll. So when it got out.
He actually did?
Yeah. So when it got out, he tweeted, fuck you, you Raggedy Ann bitch.
Annabelle really said, I'm going to head out.
The Warrens Museum got shut down for zoning laws, which fuck you. That's an institution. It should be above the law.
We need that.
That's
museum.
Our church. Okay.
It literally is. So, I mean, I would never go into it in a million fucking years. You couldn't pay me enough.
It's a holy place.
You could pay me enough.
Venmo me.
Venmo me.
You could definitely pay her enough. You also give Amanda three white claws and she will do almost anything.
Yeah, I would probably open the Annabelle case, take her out and run around town with her. Okay. Are you going first?
I am. I think it's my turn, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, sit back and relax.
Yeah, get comfy, girl.
Let me get this vodka rosé you gave me.
Just the strongest shit in America.
Fuck. I have a beer in one hand. And a vodka rosé in the other.
You have to chase your rosé with your beer.
I actually do because it's kind of gross.
I'm going to be doing kind of a conspiracy mystery situation.
It's what the bitches love.
The bitches love it. Me being the bitches. So we're going to be talking about the disappearance of Cessna N1812H, which had on board some very prominent political figures.
Is this a plane?
It's a plane, yeah. Okay. So a Cessna is a type of plane. Okay. That's just the name of it. So
I thought you were saying a person's name. I was like, who the fuck is this?
You're like,
bitch?
Who the fuck's Cessna N1?
I thought she was an AI.
No, it's Grimes and Elon Musk's new baby. The disappearance of Cessna.
Imagine.
I mean, that sounds like something they would name a child.
Elon,
call us. It's fine. Okay. Give me a Tesla. Dobrik. What's his name?
David Dobrik.
Dobrik. I don't know anybody. I'm like 100 years old. It's
David
insane.
Dobrik, give me a Tesla.
Give me a Tesla, David. My car literally is broken, actually. Yeah. So if you wanted to give me a Tesla, it's fine. It's fine. Okay. So my sources today are Missing in Alaska by John Walczak, which is an iHeartMedia. What?
Is this that big famous Missing in Alaska thing?
Is it big famous?
Isn't Missing in Alaska like a podcast?
It's a brand new, or it's a new podcast that just ended like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I never listened, but I've heard of it.
I listened to every episode. There's so many.
Perfect.
And it was amazing.
Perfect.
By John Walczak and iHeartMedia. So this was like my main source for today because he's an investigative reporter that's been on this case for literally like 10 years. And he did like a ton of reporting on it. And like he uncovered a bunch of stuff that had not been shown previously. The face you make when you drink that rosé is shocking.
I feel like I'm taking shots of vodka.
Oh, her story is going to be fun today. Also, medium.com, an article by Robin Barefield. The Washington Post, an article by Marissa Latty. History.com. AlaskaWeb.org, and of course Wikipedia. Go donate. Hey.
And if you donate and you click the box that says you pay 35 cents more, they get your whole donation. Okay.
All right, amazing work. You're welcome, Wikipedia. That one's for free on the house.
I know,
because we love you.
We actually paid you to do that. So
we actually both did. We paid them to do an ad. Amazing. Okay.
Fuck.
So this story has a ton of names and there's a lot going on. So feel free to like interrupt me and ask at any point if like anything's confusing. She just looks at both the drink she has in each hand. She has two drinks happening and goes, of course.
Obviously. Do you know me?
This all started October 16th, 1972. Four men boarded a Cessna 310. For a 550-mile flight from Anchorage, Alaska to Juneau.
Juneau, Alaska?
Yes.
Okay.
Two of these men were elected officials. One was a political aide and one was the private pilot who was commonly hired to like take around politicians. The two politicians were the House Majority Leader, Hale Boggs, from Louisiana, and the first-term Representative, Nick Begich, from Alaska. The third passenger was Russell Brown, who was Begich's aide. Begich was up for re-election and was expected to win over his Republican counterpart, but he was still out on the campaign trail and he had brought Boggs along to help like the final push a couple days before the election, right? So the plane took off early in the morning. The weather wasn't great, but the pilot didn't think it was anything bad enough to like actually ground the plane. It took off approximately 9 a.m. and they were never seen again. This incited the largest search and rescue mission to date in the United States. Nearly 100 airplanes searched the flight route, both military and civilian. Over 325,000 miles of land were searched in 40 days from the air. And they also sent out two separate ground missions to search through this area called Portage Pass, which is where it was assumed that the plane went down. But despite this massive search, like as thorough as they could get it, not a single piece of the plane has ever been found. So I know that might sound like not that surprising. Alaska is, first of all, massive, and it's also extreme weather. But that actually is extremely rare that no piece of the plane has ever been found. Plane crashes, on the other hand, are extremely common in Alaska because the weather changes on a dime.
And sometimes it's like dark all the time.
Yep. And like fog can roll in with like no notice and like totally blind like a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
According to the Alaska search and rescue teams, 95 to 99% of all missing planes in Alaska are located, typically within a few months, like to a year. There are some that have taken longer, but for the most part, basically every plane is found. So the fact that this one was missing and still is missing all these years later is extremely bizarre, a total outlier, like makes no sense, right?
So 1972.
Yep.
And it's still not one single
piece. A single piece. When they did this search, the color of the plane was like bright orange and white. That happens a lot for small planes that do like little jumps in Alaska. So that way, if it crashes, you can see it easily in the snow, right? They don't want like an all white plane.
Was this like a private jet?
It was. A Cessna is like those little planes that you see, like when people are like, I'm a pilot. And they're like in those little planes that hold like five people.
Okay.
That's a Cessna.
Okay.
Those are really common in Alaska because everything is so spread out. You need planes to get from place to place.
Okay.
When they were searching for this plane, first of all, they found another plane wreck that was 15 years old. And they also found things. Like I said, the color of the plane was orange. They found things like a golf ball sized piece of styrofoam that was bright orange, and it was just not related to the plane at all. But I'm talking like the small pieces that they found of other things are shocking to me that they never found this plane at all. So both of these men were up for re-election only days later after they, you know,
kicked to the bucket.
Disappeared. Yeah. Assumingly kicked the proverbial bucket.
I don't know why I said that.
I was very rude, Amanda. I know. Canceled. I'm sorry. No more vodka wine for you.
They didn't kick the bucket.
They tapped it politely. Yes. Both of them won their re-election seats, even though they were missing. So special elections were actually held to replace both of them after they were officially declared dead several months later. Hale Boggs' wife actually won his seat and took control of her now late husband's seat, and carried on his legacy. While Peggy Begich also ran, so it was Nick Begich's wife, ran to take over his seat, but she actually lost to the Republican Don Young, who had been running against her husband and had lost initially. And for the record, Young is actually still Alaska's single congressman to this day.
The one that won.
Yep. Oh. So seemingly Begich going missing completely changed the face of Alaskan politics, because Begich was a Democrat and he beat Young like easily. But then Young won and has held the position to this day.
So what we're saying is Young did it.
No, I'm actually not saying that. Okay. Oh, just wait till I get to the theories. But it's just crazy because it definitely changed the face of Alaskan politics. Things went in a very conservative direction after Young took over. And he has, because the population of Alaska is relatively small, he's kind of just has like a power hold. He's been called Alaska's third senator. That's like his nickname. But like I said, to this day. So like Begich had been like really interested in like indigenous people's rights and taking care of the land and making sure that Alaska was treated like priority. And Young unfortunately, sucks. Young does not feel that way.
So Young sucks. You fucking suck.
You heard it here first.
And Begich was a good guy.
Begich was a very good guy. Like all the accounts of him, everyone who talked about him, because like even Boggs was a cool dude too. He fought for civil rights back when that wasn't something that like made you popular, you know?
Wait, really quick. So Begich and Boggs were mm-hmm. both running.
Yes.
And then there was one other guy.
Yeah, that was his aide. So okay. It was like his assistant.
Okay.
And Boggs had won 13 elections in a row. He was the House Majority Leader. He was basically the cooler version of like Nancy Pelosi. Okay. Like how it's like she's an institution. She's been in office forever. But he was awesome. Like he fought for civil rights. Like he fought to get the civil rights bill passed. He was like friends with Martin Luther King. And he was from Louisiana, which is like a super conservative southern state, but he was so popular and people loved him so much, he actually made like a huge positive impact. So like his loss was like really sad, but it was cool that his wife took over because his wife continued on his legacy.
Yeah,
but it was really sad that he was such a good guy, and we'll get into even more how good of a guy he was. He had some people, some detractors, like people said he liked to drink too much, or like that he could be like,
don't we all?
Yeah, that he could be like a loudmouth, and I'm like, same. So I respect him even more.
Literally sounds like us.
Yeah, but both these guys had like sterling reputations. There wasn't a bad word to be said about them. The fact that Nick Begich represented Alaska and the indigenous people felt like he represented them properly, to me, says a lot about him as a person. While all of this is extremely bummerific, is exactly what I wrote.
Amazing.
The mystery of this plane crash goes much deeper than just a run-of-the-mill accident. So politicians are actually statistically more likely to die than almost anybody else in a plane crash because they fly more often than other people, and they also tend to fly in smaller planes. So like me and you, when we fly fucking JetBlue. I'm a Southwest Airlines girl myself.
No.
But those bigger planes are less likely to go down, right? And then those small planes are more likely to go down. So a lot of politicians actually die in plane crashes, which I was shocked to see when I was researching this. But there's some elements to this crash and who was involved in this crash that led to some very compelling conspiracy theories.
Let's go.
So I just want to throw this out there, allegedly, because I'm going to dive into some stuff that I read and some reporting that's been done that's a little controversial. And I want to say I'm just telling people what I research and what I read.
Do this. Because I hear this a lot on podcasts. Everything you hear is just for entertainment purposes.
Yeah, guys. Hello. We're both idiots. Don't listen to us.
Nothing we say is real life.
Thanks, Barbie.
Why did I sound like Barbie?
You did a Barbie voice. But seriously, like, I'm not trying to accuse anyone of anything except for so I just wanted to throw that out there because a lot of people, or not a lot, but some of the people involved in this are still alive, and you know, whatever, don't sue me, please. The official story behind this is that it was just an accident, most likely caused by bad weather that day. But let's start with the theory that popped up first after the plane went down.
Okay.
So as soon as the two men went missing, theories started swirling around that the plane had actually gone missing not because of bad weather, but because of bad politics. Hale Boggs had been on the Warren Commission. Do you know what that is? That's the commission that was put together to investigate the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Perfect.
And while Boggs had been openly supportive in like interviews and stuff of the commission's findings that there had been one bullet fired by Lee Harvey Oswald behind closed doors and to like his close friends and aides, and it got ended up getting leaked out, he was known to say he thought it was all bullshit. He thought that the CIA and the FBI had been giving him false information and lying to him. And he basically started openly calling out the FBI director, who was notoriously terrible, J. Edgar Hoover. So J. Edgar Hoover, one of the most hated men in politics ever, actually stayed the director of the FBI for a long time because apparently he had blackmail on most of the presidents, so they were too afraid to fire him. Richard Nixon actually said to one of his aides when he became president, his aide was like, "You hate J. Edgar Hoover, why don't you fire him?" And he said, "Because I'm afraid what he's going to come out with if I fire him, so I'll just leave him."
So J. Edgar Hoover was in the FBI?
J. Edgar Hoover was the director of the FBI for, like, years.
Like, is that, like his two thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did I think he was, like, an inventor?
Are you thinking of the guy who made, like the Hoover vacuums? That's a different guy.
Oh. Okay.
So Boggs came out very vocally and said that he thought that J. Edgar Hoover was tapping his phone and tapping the phone of other senators and congresspeople. And it became such a big issue that J. Edgar Hoover, there's actually leaked tapes between J. Edgar Hoover and President Nixon where J. Edgar Hoover is being like, Boggs is like a crazy alcoholic. He needs to be getting like gotten rid of, like stuff like that, right? Suspicious as fuck. Also, J. Edgar Hoover, just general trash can person. We can all say that pretty openly.
Trash.
So, of course, as soon as Boggs's plane went down, people were thinking the FBI or the CIA because, of course, Boggs also said a bunch of shitty stuff about the CIA during the Warren Commission because the CIA was shady as fuck about who killed JFK. Being known for being, like, outspoken against those two agencies, as we know historically, gets you fucking killed.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense to me. But the one thing is that Hoover actually died of a heart attack, like health complications, 6 months before the plane crash. And somebody else took over who kind of had like a totally different view.
Okay.
So that makes it like a little less convincing. Mm-hmm. Like if Hoover had been alive while this plane went down, I would have been like, that's fucking it. This guy's a psycho. He's evil. He's blackmailing people. He's tapping phones. He's covering up assassinations. This man, this trash can man, obviously killed these two politicians.
Yeah, but he was only upset with Boggs, though. What about the other guy?
Collateral damage?
Mm,
the other sucks. Two guys. There was the pilot of the plane and the aide that was on the plane.
Well, the aide is going to be collateral damage either way.
Yeah, unfortunately, and I can say this as someone who worked as an assistant in Hollywood for a long time, unfortunately, nobody gives a fuck about you when you're an assistant or an aide. It's very sad. What really makes it less convincing that it was the FBI or the CIA is that in 1995, someone came forward and claimed that it was a bombing. So this introduces a new character, Jerry Max Paisley. So it's 1995. Most people have forgotten about this plane crash. The plane crash actually got forgotten about like really quickly because the year it happened was the same year as the Watergate scandal. So of course, people were paying attention to that instead. Like impeachment of the president, you know what I mean? It's kind of like those people who, like, got murdered the day before 9/11, and it's like, that shit never got solved. Like, you know, it happened a lot. Actually, there was a woman who got murdered who may have been murdered by a politician a couple days before 9/11, but then 9/11 happened and everyone forgot. I think he's still a politician.
I need to know about that, too.
Maybe I'll do that soon. That was pretty crazy. Yeah. But people are looking into it again now because they're like, oh, woo-hoo. Oops. Oops. Oh, I forgot. Murder is bad, turns out. Okay, so it's 1995, and Jerry Max Paisley is serving a life sentence for the murder of multiple people. He's a known con man with mafia ties to two different mafia families that had relocated to Tucson, Arizona in the 1960s and 70s. These mob families were the Ligavolis and the Bonanos, both of whom were like very influential players in the crime scene. You know how they talk about like the big mafia families? These were two of them.
I so like those names.
They're cool, right?
The Bonanos.
Bonanos. There's actually, if you are interested in that, there's this, I think it's a podcast or a book called The Banana Wars. About the banana, because it sounds like banana. Yeah. The Bonanos had like a mafia war in Tucson, Arizona with another crime family. Oh. And then with the police. It's cool. Yeah, it's a really cool story. I can't get into it now, but yeah. A year after Paisley was sentenced, he wanted to speak to someone about an unsolved case that he thought he might be able to help with. So before anyone's like, oh, he just wanted attention, or he just wanted time off his sentence, or he wanted money or whatever, he never went on a press tour about this. He also was serving multiple life sentences, so there was no possibility of parole or special treatment or anything like that. And he actually was really low-key about it because he almost felt guilty about diming out his ex-wife. And he repeatedly said that in the transcripts.
Who's his ex-wife?
We'll get into that.
Oh, okay.
He gets talking, and a lot of very shocking information comes forward that scares the police he's talking to. He claims that the plane that went down was not from weather or from the CIA, but from a bomb that he helped bring to Alaska for a mob family just a month before the plane went down. It turns out that less than a year and a half, about 16 to 17 months after Nick Begich went missing, his wife, Peggy Begich, married Jerry Paisley down in Arizona. While Peggy claims that they met randomly in a bar in Alaska a month after her husband disappeared, Paisley tells a very different story. He said that they were actually introduced at a bar called the Contiki, which is still standing today in Tucson, Arizona, which was at the time a popular mob spot in 1972, about 3 months before the plane went missing. And that he met her, they became close, he helped her get accommodations, and then when he moved up to Alaska to keep servicing one of his mob friends, this was about a month after the plane went down, he reconnected with her, and that's when their relationship began.
A month after.
Yeah, but they met months before.
Okay.
And she was down in Tucson with these mob bosses.
So she was in Tucson, Arizona years before she met her husband?
Which husband?
What's his name? The one that went down, Boggs.
Begich?
Begich.
No, she was already married to Begich. She was in Tucson 2 months before the plane went down.
And met Paisley.
And met Paisley.
And immediately had a connection.
They got along. He helped her find a place to stay. They were all partying together with this other mob people.
So she was involved in the mob.
I'll get into that.
Okay, sorry.
No, it's okay. That's a good question. But yeah, just so you know, the plane went down in, I think it was like October, end of October-ish, 16th. She was there 2 months before. She was there in August.
Okay.
In Tucson.
Of 1972.
The same year, 2 months before the plane went down.
Okay.
And that's where Paisley says that they met in Tucson, partying with these mob people. At first, the police didn't really know what to do with this information. They might have thought even that Paisley was doing it for attention, but he made it very clear that he wasn't, because he didn't want to do any interviews with the press. He wasn't trying to even get back at his ex-wife. He actually was very kind about the way that he talked about her. Jerry Paisley is a convicted murderer and mobster. But he was known for being a bomber. That was kind of his whole thing, explosives. He'd actually been suspected of bombing several judges' houses back when some of his mob friends were being prosecuted. And he was, like, bombing the judges' houses. At least one was confirmed. The police thought it was interesting enough that they started reaching out and talking to people. So when Anchorage police sergeant Mike Grimes heard about this, he immediately wanted to look into it. And even though nobody else in his department wanted to, of course, because most cops suck, he contacted the FBI and was told, you will do nothing there. You will send anything you find to us, by an FBI agent who refused to even meet with him within FBI headquarters. So everybody who started looking into this case immediately got shot down by either the FBI, the CIA, or their local police organizations. And to make it more clear, that Paisley might have been telling the truth, there are pictures of Paisley and Peggy Begich's wedding where in Tucson, Arizona, where a bunch of mob bosses and like head mob bosses showed up and were there at the wedding and at the after party. Like, they're partying with them.
So he got married to Peggy after the plane went down.
17 months after.
17 months after.
So okay. A year and 5 months.
And she lies and says that that didn't happen?
No, she says that it happened, but she said that they just randomly met in a bar in Alaska a month after her husband passed.
Oh, okay. Ah.
So the two, Paisley and Peggy, also honeymooned in Mexico, but not alone, like a normal honeymoon. Guess who was on their honeymoon with them?
Mobs.
Yep. The daughter and son of mob boss Peter Ligavoli Sr., literally on their honeymoon with them.
To keep an eye on them.
Not sure why, but they were there. And then during their brief marriage, Peggy bought Paisley cars and lavish gifts with all the insurance money that she got from her husband's passing. And she also bought him a bar that apparently served as a mob watering hole up in Alaska. But why, you might ask?
Yes, I did ask.
Would the mob be interested in killing Nick Begich anyway?
Why?
Why would they?
I don't know. Tell me.
So this era in Alaska's history is called the Black Gold Rush because it's when oil was discovered in Alaska. Oil equals money, right?
Right.
And Nick Begich was a huge proponent of making sure that like indigenous people got paid for the land that was used. He was constantly saying like, we need to take into account like ecosystem and make sure that we protect the natural land that's here. We need to make sure anybody who we're going to be profiting off of gets paid properly. And he was like all for like making sure there was rent control because he knew that a boom in money also would mean a bunch of people would move up there,
right,
and raise rents and raise prices and all that stuff. And he was somebody who was trying to make sure that the right thing happened. And when the mob heard about this, all they thought was money, right? And that's the idea. Money, duh.
Yeah.
So why would they not just bribe Nick Begich, right? Well, apparently Nick Begich was like the most straight edge dude ever. He would never like fold to pressure from his colleagues, from his friends, from his peers. He didn't take any like compromises on anything that he thought was morally wrong. He always was like super straight and narrow.
Was he rich?
No, not really. Getting rid of Nick wouldn't guarantee that the mob would have a stronghold, but something else would. Having someone who wanted Nick gone in their pocket. So one more theory that's posed about this, and once again, I'm just relaying information here, is that Peggy was seen in Tucson before the plane went missing, and during this time, her and Nick were actually separated. And they had been for a while, and they were actually considering divorce. So the way that Jerry Paisley puts it forward is that he actually doesn't think she really understands what she was getting involved with, but she kind of got somehow tangentially involved with the mob, and the mob was like, hey, we'll take care of your husband and we'll help fund you running for office. So why would they not want someone in office that they killed her husband, so she can't turn her back on them?
Yeah,
she owes them,
right?
The Begich family, of course, denies this and denies that Peggy was ever even in Tucson at the Contiki, but a lot of, multiple witnesses said so. And why would Jerry Paisley lie? He has no reason to lie at this point.
He's in jail forever.
And Peggy did run for her late husband's seat, and when she lost, she actually tried to complain that there was foul play and, like, fight it, because she got third. She didn't even get second. She got third. And, of course, like I said, the Republican opponent won.
Didn't the Boggs wife win?
Yes, but that was in Louisiana.
Oh, okay.
Because they were from different states.
Oh, I got it. So Boggs is Louisiana. Begich is Alaska.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And at this point, when she's running for election, she's most likely already in a relationship with Jerry Paisley. She's already dating a fucking mobster.
Yeah.
While she's running for re-election and throwing a fit when she loses. Wonder why. Just saying. Suspicious.
Mob wife.
So there are other theories, of course, about what took place. Some people think that it was just weather and the plane iced over, or that there was a mechanical failure. But according to airport records, the plane had actually just undergone extensive inspection and was in pristine condition. And even though the government agency that investigated this claimed that there was no de-icing or only one de-icing device on the plane, according to records about the plane, there was actually multiple de-icing things on the plane that would have given the pilot 5 to 10 extra minutes to make sure they could land safely.
But I'm not understanding how no pieces of the plane were found.
So if the plane was blown up, they never would have had time to call for help. They never would have had...
Yeah, but wouldn't there be pieces?
It would have gotten exploded into smaller pieces, so it would have gotten, like, distributed more. Nobody really knows why the plane's never been found. And so the pilot, his name was Don Johns, with a Z. He was kind of a risk taker and, like, kind of like a bad boy in the pilot community. But he was hired by a lot of politicians to fly people around because he was also known to be extremely smart and an extremely good pilot. But there was something kind of weird that he was doing this flight for free. And nobody knows why.
Because the mob was paying him.
Maybe. And maybe the mob was paying him and told him, hey, just go a different route than you're supposed to go. We'll pay you extra because we just want this guy to be late. Maybe that's what they told him. He didn't even know. You know what I mean? He didn't even know there was a bomb on board.
Or maybe they lied and said that he was going to like take him to like some weird deserted island or something.
Yeah, because the way that Jerry Paisley presents it is that he brought a locked suitcase that he never saw the insides of from Arizona to Alaska, handed it off to somebody else, and then 2 weeks later, the plane went down, right? And this was like two or three weeks after he met Peggy in Tucson. And then after the plane went down, when he got sent back up to work in Alaska, he was told, you know, that, oh, you didn't know that was a bomb that you took up there. Like I said, Don Johns was like an extremely experienced flyer. So like the idea that he just suddenly didn't know how to fly in the weather he'd been flying in his entire life, he had like thousands of hours of flight time, is like pretty crazy to like people who knew him. And just for reference, there were 515 small plane crashes from 2004 to 2008 alone in Alaska. Only 40 planes have gone missing and never been found since 1964. So if we just take 515 in the span of 4 years, that means there's literally thousands of plane crashes since 1964, probably tens of thousands, right? And only 40 of them have never been found. So it's extremely rare that that will happen. And nobody knows why or how. Also, the reason I actually originally found out about this story is because Nick Begich's son... one of his sons, they had six kids. One of his sons went on to become the mayor of, I can't remember if it's Anchorage or Juneau, and then was a congressman or a senator for a little while as well. And then another one of his sons wrote a book exposing HARP. So fun fact, Amanda and I have a missing episode. The first episode we ever recorded, and I told the story of HARP, which may or may not be a government agency trying to control the weather.
Oh my God.
His son, Nick Begich Jr., Dr. Nick Begich Jr., wrote the book about HARP, the government agency that may or may not be trying to fuck with the ecosystem.
Oh my God, wait. Did we just never do anything with that episode?
No, we never did.
Holy fuck.
Yeah. I know, I always think about wanting to redo it because HARP is so interesting. But
it is interesting.
Yeah. Maybe I can try and get something together for Patreon, but yeah. But isn't that crazy? That's his son.
Oh, shit.
Because do you remember when we were recording that? I even said, oh, yeah, his dad was a politician who went missing in a plane and they never found his body for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so like close to 99% of all planes that go down are found. And they have no idea why this one, despite massive, like the biggest search efforts they've ever had, they actually found other unfound planes doing the search effort. Yeah. That's how expansive it was. They never found even a fucking portion of the plane. And they have no idea why.
But couldn't then they see it on like a radar?
But that's the thing. Yeah. Like people are like, it's all white in Alaska this time of year, October. Mm. How do we not see a plane that was orange?
Yeah.
That's why they painted it orange, or a fire or a crash site. They couldn't find anything. People said, you know, if you're going to kill Nick Begich, why would you also kill Boggs? Right. Like he is what makes it a big deal. Because Begich was just like he'd only served one term. He was kind of this nerdy, like, you know, low on the totem pole politician. Why would you also kill Boggs? And people were like, duh. Of course you'd want to do it with Boggs on the plane, because then all the attention would be on Boggs. Nobody would be paying attention to what Peggy Begich is doing. Because everyone's going to be like, of course the guy who was on the Warren Commission investigating JFK, that's who everyone's going to think the conspiracy theories are about. Mm. Right? When I heard that, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense.
So the mob is smart as fuck.
Yeah. And to me, it sounds like the mob is in cahoots with some sort of government agency because the government.
Well, duh.
The government seemed like they were covering stuff up. And whether that's just because it's like gross negligence and they're embarrassed, so they're trying to make it seem like whatever, or they're in the pocket of the mob because, you know, they have a lot of money. So all it takes is paying a couple people.
Well, the mob is obviously like well connected.
Yeah. So what do you think happened?
I'm going to go with that last theory that you just said.
God, this is another one of those where I'm like, I just would love to know. I'd love to just pull back the curtain and be able to see it. Because who knows? What if it was just a tragic accident and a weird turn of events? Like stuff. I think it's a very small percentage that something weird didn't happen because just the way all this went down is too bizarre to me.
There's no fucking way that your husband would die in a plane crash and then like 2 months later, you would be dating somebody.
Dating a mobster. Here's the thing. I get it. Everyone agrees differently. No. But like, you're going to date a guy who like, he was a bartender. You're going to go from your husband who you met. This is also weird, unrelated, but fun fact. I mean, maybe this is part of the reason why. They met. She was a student and he was her high school teacher.
Peggy and Baggage. Oh.
So what if.
She was a high school student?
She felt manipulated by him and wanted out. And didn't know how to because they met when she was 16.
But I thought he was a good guy.
That's what everyone said. I mean, I don't know.
But now he's a pedophile.
I don't know when they started dating. They're from a really small town. So I don't know if he was a 22-year-old teacher. And then when she was 20 and he was 24. You know what I mean? I don't know exactly. But I do think that that's weird because I would feel really weird if someone met me when I was 14. And then even if they started dating me when I was 24, but they were 34.
Pursued me since I was 14.
It would be a little weird. So I do think that that's an interesting tidbit to add in. That she was his high school history student, and he was her teacher.
My half-sister is married to a man that was 20 years older than her and was her high school teacher.
How's that working out for them?
Great. They've been married for, like, 50 years or something.
But yeah, so that also might play into it, like, why she resented or hated him. Peggy is still alive, and she refused to be interviewed for any of this. And her son, who answered emails to Wozzeck.
Who's Wozzeck?
The investigative reporter who did Missing in Alaska.
Okay.
Sent him a couple emails and was just like, it's really hateful that you're doing this, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And is the son of Peggy and
Yeah, and Baggage. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think her and Paisley ever had kids.
And they were only together for how long?
Only like a couple years.
Until he went to prison?
Until they just got divorced because they just were like a bad fit, I guess.
Okay.
But he moved back to Tucson, continued his mob work, killed a bunch of people, bombed a bunch of people, and then eventually went to... He actually went and turned himself in. And he killed at least 5 people.
That's actually kind of weird, though, that he would get divorced. Because, like, I feel like if you get divorced or, like, something goes wrong and you're involved in the mob in any way, shape, or form, like, your whole life is going to be kind of controlled.
So he, I don't know whether it might have. I don't know what happened to Peggy after that. I know she's still alive and she's obviously like in her 80s. Baggage died in like 2009 or something. But he was very protective of her and said that his best years of his life were with her because she was smart and good and not addicted to drugs, which he was. And one of the reasons people think it's weird that he would come forward with the story and lie, that like one of the things that people think make it seem true is because he didn't make himself important, but he also didn't not incriminate himself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like, if you're going to lie, you either make yourself like seem like, oh, I'm a big, tough, badass mob boss, right? Or you make it seem like, oh, I had no idea what I was doing. I'm so innocent. He didn't do either of those things. He basically just was like, yeah, like one of my bosses came up to me and gave me this package. And I took it up there and somebody else that's in the mob took it and they told me, hey, this is something important is about to happen with this package. And then the plane went down and then they told me, yeah, that was the package that you dropped off. And he actually said, like I said about Peggy, it's not like he was trying to like be like, fuck my ex-wife. He actually seemed to still really love her and care about her. And he said, you know, I don't think she realized what she was doing. Yeah. I don't think she realized who she was messing with. And how serious it all was until it was too late. So, crazy story, right? Definitely go listen to Missing in Alaska. Why are you looking at me so crazy? You're looking at me like you want to strangle me.
No, I was just thinking about, I'm just wondering, like, is she still in the mob? Like, she had to have been. Like, maybe she is.
I don't know if she ever was in the mob.
Well, she had to have been. You have to be, like,
if you don't have to be in the mob.
Yes, you do, dude. Like, once you're, like, involved in anything and know anything, like, that's it. Like, they will kill you.
But I think what happened is they had so much dirt on her. They're like, if you ever come forward about us, we'll just fucking kill you or worse, implicate you. You have 6 kids. We're going to tell people, oh, you had your husband killed. I think they had enough dirt on her where they didn't have to kill her.
They're going to kill us.
Oh, we're for sure goners. Yeah. Hopefully we can get this episode out so people can know what happened.
And then when we go missing.
R.I.P. us.
Two white women with a podcast have to solve our murder.
Yeah.
Done. And you done. Wanted to go to Alaska.
I'm still going to Alaska in March.
Nope, not anymore.
Okay.
I'm not going to have you go missing.
Actually, my brother, who is supposed to go with me, the reason he's going with me is because he looked up the violent crime statistics in the city that I'm going to in Alaska. And he was like, yeah, these are too high. I'm coming with you. Sorry.
What town are you going to?
I'm going to be going to Fairbanks.
I was having a big struggle bus this week finding a story, and I waited till the last minute because that's what I do, and I'm a piece of shit. So I had this one story in my notes that I've had for weeks, and I decided to do it because our lovely listener, Karen, who is also our pod mom.
Yes, Karen, our day one.
Day one. She found us day one, basically.
Literally, I don't know how she found us. Karen, we want an origin story.
Yeah, Karen. You found us. You stuck with us. She suggested that we do more alien things. So here we are.
I'm so excited. I love alien shit.
My story is Hopkinsville Goblins. Or the Kelly Hopkinsville Encounter, as other people call it.
I'm so excited. This sounds amazing already. I love goblins also.
So my sources today are history.com, Wikipedia, that forced me to pay for them, countryliving.com, and alienlegacy1955.com.
That's a lot to take in.
Yeah. So another reason that I realized when I went back into my notes, and I've had this kind of sitting there for weeks, that I was like, oh, this is actually a perfect story to do because one, it took place on August 21st, which is coming up. So it'll be, let's see, 1955. It'll be the 65th anniversary.
Oh, shit. That's so cool.
Yeah. So
I dig that.
So Friday will be the 55th anniversary of this incident. And it's also 2 days before my birthday. So, meh. Okay.
We love things that are on our birthday. Yeah, we love birthday shit.
So on the evening of August 21st, 1955, in the small town of Kelly, Kentucky, near the town of Hopkinsville, Elmer Lucky Sutton, a young man in his early 20s, was visiting his mom, Glennie Lankford, and 3 younger half-siblings at the family farmhouse he had grown up in. He was on a break from his job, which was like a traveling carnival circus thing.
Oh my God, he was a carny?
Yeah.
Oh, we love a good carny.
We love a carny.
Hell yeah.
Is that's not like Barnum and Bailey. Kinda.
I mean, carnival workers. I don't know.
I know Barnum and Bailey is a piece of shit. But we love The Greatest Showman, so okay.
Never seen it. Sure, it's great.
Oh my God.
She's always so mad
watch
at me.
Watch party.
She's okay. Always so mad. Watch party.
I love The Greatest Showman. So he was on break from his job from the traveling carnival circus thingy, whatever. Elmer's wife, Vera, was with him along with their friends Billy Ray Taylor and his wife June, his brother JC and his sister-in-law Arlene, plus a family friend Opie were also there that night. So in total, I think there was 8 adults and 3 children that were together in the farmhouse that night. This farmhouse was pretty run down, wasn't painted, they had no running water, no televisions, no telephones, just kind of people sitting in a house.
Yeah, that sounds really boring.
Yeah.
And also very unsanitary.
I mean, if you think about it, they had probably really good conversation and the kids had really good imaginations.
Positive thinking.
I imagine the kids were playing jacks of some sort. So on that Sunday night, around 7 p.m., after a lovely dinner made by Miss Glennie, 21-year-old Billy Ray Taylor went out to go fetch some water from the backyard because, like I said, they had no running water, so they had to go to the backyard and pump the water out of the well.
Have you ever had well water?
Absolutely not.
It's crazy tasting.
It's good?
I mean, I think it's good, but that's because I grew up on it.
You grew up on well water?
Yeah, so my grandparents' farmhouse was well water. Everything was well water. Oh. And to me, it tastes good, but it tastes like very like minerally. It has a very specific taste. So like people who grew up on like bottled water would hate it for sure.
Yeah,
it
I grew has, up like, on, what's that one? Poland Springs.
Damn, girl.
There you go. You can identify with these people.
I'm feeling a kinship already.
So Billy Ray Taylor goes out to the backyard to get the well water. When he looks up and he sees a silvery object with a rainbow light coming out of it. He stands there for a minute staring at it as it silently comes closer to the house, passes right above it, stops in the air before dropping straight to the ground. Billy Ray immediately runs back inside the house and starts frantically telling everyone what he just saw. He's like, holy fuck. This is what I imagine him saying. Holy fuck. I was out there pumping the water from the well and some weird rainbow light was coming at me. I don't know what the fuck it was.
Well, and these people, they don't have anything, right?
No, they don't even have television.
Yeah, so like, it's not like he saw this on the news or something, right? Like, okay.
So everyone's like, okay, Billy Ray, you know, like.
Billy Ray Cyrus.
Billy Ray Cyrus. Like, okay, Billy Ray. And they just kind of like laughed it off. And they're like, you're dumb, whatever. Billy, basically the whole time after this was like, no, like, it's true. Like, trying to like make them believe it. But they were just kind of laughing it off. So about an hour later, both the families started to hear noises outside. The family dog begins incessantly barking until it got so scared that it ran back into the house to hide, like through the house. So that's when everyone started to be like, the fuck is going on here? Like, why is the dog scared? Like, what's happening? So Elmer Sutton and Billy Ray run to the back door and they stare out the window and they see a glowing light coming towards them. As the light got closer, they started to make out a creature. They said it looked to be about 3.5 feet tall, had an oversized head, big pointy ears, arms that extended all the way to the ground, and large glowing yellow eyes. Its body was shimmery and reflected off the moon, giving it a silvery metallic look.
Have you ever heard the people who think the reason aliens are seen like having like this really similar color is it's actually their suit, like the big head? Like imagine if you saw like an astronaut and you saw it outside not knowing what it was and you saw like the big round head, the long arms, the weird shaped body, right? That it's not actually the shape of the alien, it's the shape of the suit.
That's very possible.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah, I never thought about that.
Because when you were describing that, I'm like, that sounds like technology. It doesn't sound like, but I mean, it could be anything,
but obviously. What do we know?
But I just thought that was interesting. Like, because the big head especially, because it would make sense if you're not sure what you're going to be breathing in.
That's what every alien looks like.
Yeah, you have that big helmet on.
Yeah.
You even think about humans wearing big-ass helmets when they go into space. Everybody does it. It makes sense.
That's very true.
Why would they breathe our oxygen?
Fuck it. I don't know.
Sorry, I just...
No, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. So the two men start running back into the house, and they start heading for their guns. Naturally, they're in Kentucky.
We have to stand.
So they grabbed a 20-gauge shotgun and a .22 rifle. Does that make sense?
.22 caliber
rifle. Okay. Off the shelf and ran straight back outside. At this point, the creature was about 20 feet away from the house, and Elmer and Billy Ray just start shooting at it incessantly. They said that they could hear like what sounded like metal rattling around a cage. So, like, when it hit this object, obviously.
Wouldn't that make sense, then, if it was the suit?
Yeah. Shit. You're right. They then said the creature did a flip into the air and then scurried away into the darkness. So, they waited out there a little bit longer to see if the creature would come back. And then, when it didn't, they went back inside. So, the whole family went into the living room to try and figure out what the fuck was going on, have their little meeting or whatever you call it. When all of a sudden, a glowing pair of eyes appeared at the window. Immediately, they shot at the window, putting a huge hole through the screen. But once again, the creature did a backflip and took off running.
It just makes me think of like all the, like when your gravity is different, so that means your weight is different, like how on the moon. Yeah, but if this thing is
3.5 feet tall.
Yeah, well, and think of it, if it grew up in a different gravity, its muscles are going to be different. Like on the moon, humans can, right, like jump and like almost fly.
Yeah, that's true.
Wouldn't it make sense if they were from a planet with a different gravitational pull that they could just like...
And all the people on their planet are 3.5 feet tall.
Yeah.
Okay, so the creature did a backflip, took off running, right? So naturally, the guys again, Billy Ray and Elmer, jumped up and ran outside. So they go out to their porch and they're looking to see if they hit the creature with their bullets because they were shooting, you know, quite a bit. And one of the wives, I think it was Arlene, which is... Billy, which is one of the sister-in-laws.
These are such like classic Southern names.
I know, like, Arlene. I think she's one of the sister-in-laws. She starts screaming at the top of her lungs as she sees a claw-like hand come down from the roof and try to swipe at one of their heads. So she's like,
it's like signs.
That's what I imagine.
This is
her
definitely
doing.
Pre-signs.
Post-signs. So Elmer looks up, shoots at the creature, who jumps off the roof and runs again. So at this point, all of these adults, there's 8 adults, have all seen the same exact creature.
And they don't have TV. They're not influenced
They live in a tiny little dinky old farm town with nothing. Nothing for miles, like not a big town, you know what I mean? So just they all see the same fucking thing. So all of a sudden, more of these little men or creatures start to appear in the trees. They kept shooting, but quickly they realized that their guns were obviously not doing shit to these things. Like, they were just metal rattling around. So everyone runs.
So they could hear the noise when they would, like, hit them?
Yeah, so they said they sounded like metal rattling in a cage.
Damn, that's crazy.
So everyone runs back into the house, and they basically start huddling together because they're scared. And for the next few hours, the creatures, or these little men, were going all around the house, peeking into the windows, scratching at the roof, just being like fucking creepy and weird.
And they obviously don't have a phone or anything.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
What were these things? What did they want? If 8 adults and 3 children are all seeing the same thing, like what the fuck is going on? So finally, at 11 p.m., they decide they need to get the fuck out of the house and make a run for it. So they make it to their cars. They drive off to the nearest police station in Hopkinsville. And when they got there, they're all, like, out of breath. They're frantically crying. They're shaking, like, trying to tell the police officers what they just experienced. So they start saying things like, we've been fighting off these little silver men for the past few hours. Like, whatever, like, the fuck we've experienced. So the sergeant that was on that night started calling other police stations nearby. And he called the Fort Campbell Army Base. He called, like, the media, like, everything. Within the hour, there were about 20 policemen and media members heading towards the Sutton farm along with the family. The authorities searched all over the property, but they found no sign of these little men anywhere. They only saw the bullet holes in the window screens and the shotgun shells all over the ground. They interviewed the neighbors, who all agreed, like every single neighbor in the area, agreed that they saw colorful lights on the property and that they heard really strange noises all night. And they heard like the guns going off and stuff, but they just thought that they were just like hunting. And
if you were poor, like, why would you shoot guns at your own, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why would you risk fucking up your own house if you're like not exactly balling out
but
for
also
a
they
prank?
Saw like rainbow lights, like what would that be?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's crazy to me. Yeah, it doesn't exact, they don't even have like
television,
or you said that they didn't have power, right?
Right.
So well, how would they have been producing rainbow lights on their own?
No running water.
Trick people. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's now 2:15 a.m. The police and the Taylor family, which was Billy Ray and his wife, leave the farmhouse for the night thinking that everything was over and the little green men, silver men, whatever the fuck you call them, were gone. So the Sutton family is still at the farmhouse and they decide they need to try to get some sleep. Around 3:30 a.m., Glennie, like the little mom, grandma thing, she woke up to
a person.
Well, she's the mom and a grandma.
Okay, got it.
She woke up to a noise outside her bedroom window. When she opened her eyes, she saw the creature was back and was staring into her window with its yellow glowing eyes. She jumped up without screaming. She actually kept her composure and she ran to her sons and she woke them all up. For the next few hours and into the next day, they all kept watch with their guns waiting for the creatures to come back. But surprisingly, they never did. So obviously, once the story hit the newspapers, the families got ridiculed and harassed like crazy. They got called hoaxers. People were saying that they were probably under the influence of drugs or alcohol. But something that we later learn is that Glennie was very religious, like very Christian, and she did not allow alcohol onto her property at all.
We've been drinking tonight. If I opened your window,
yeah,
I'm not fucking stupid. Like, you have to drink a lot of alcohol to be...
You have to be on ecstasy or doing shrooms. Like, let's be real. Like, right?
Yeah, like, dude, I'm sorry. And also, like, if you're not stupid, if you've gotten too high on weed even,
yeah,
you're usually not stupid enough to think shit is actually happening.
You don't really hallucinate, though.
No, like, well, like, I've gotten too high a couple times where, like, shit was weird, where I'm like, oh, I feel weird.
Same.
Like, I usually the feeling I get is that I'm really, really small and that everything else is really, really big. Is the feeling that I get. Yeah, and so, but, like, I always know, oh, this is happening because I took too much of my edible before I went to bed. Now I'm trying to go to bed and I'm picturing my bed as this giant sea and it's not. Like,
yeah.
You know,
but you don't see like, and like 11 people all seeing the same thing. And there were children. So yeah, so Glennie didn't allow alcohol or drugs on her property at all. But no matter what people were saying about them and no matter how horrible, you know, people were treating them, every single person stuck true to their story. They were like, this is what we saw. This is what happened that night. That's it. The end.
If they were lying, there'd be one snitch who was like, hey, we just wanted some money from the media or whatever.
And one of the men, JC, who was, I think, one of the half-brothers of Elmer, he was so traumatized by what had happened that he couldn't even, like, keep a job anymore, like, for the rest of his life. And he was, like, kind of just, like, going crazy a little bit for, like, the rest of his life.
That's like that kid who grew up at the Amityville Horror House, and he was like, I was 10. Why would I lie for my family? I still have nightmares about this. Like, wouldn't you come forward and be like, hey, my family were fucking freaks?
Yeah, like it's, if it's traumatizing, it's fucking traumatizing.
Yeah.
So even though tons of people were harassing them and making fun of them and calling them liars, even more people than that kept coming to the farmhouse to try to see the aliens. So people
That'd be us.
Yeah. So people were camping out on their lawn. People would literally walk into the house while they were out and like take things to try to get like, what's it called? A souvenir.
From their home. Like they're robbing. Home. That's robbing you.
Yes. And they were just basically giving them no personal space whatsoever. So about 10 days after this experience, the family left the farmhouse and Miss Glennie ended up selling it because people just would not leave them alone, whether it was because they were obsessed with the aliens or because they were just harassing the family and calling them liars. So they left and moved. So during investigations with the police, each family member was pulled into a room, into like separate rooms and questioned about what had happened. And every single one of them, even the three children, basically described the same stories and the creature's like physical appearance to like a T, like exactly the same.
It's really hard to get people to have a straight story. That's why like a lot of people who commit crimes together, they'll have two completely different stories, especially children. Like, come on, man. That's like something happened to these people.
Yeah.
This is crazy. I've never heard this before.
Really? It's actually very well known.
Is it?
As far as like alien encounters go. Yeah. So in 2005, Elmer's daughter, Geraldine, who was one of the kids that night.
Yeah.
Was invited to speak at a panel at an event commemorating the 50th anniversary of the sighting. So she's older now. She's like 60 at this point or whatever. While she was there, she discovered that people had a lot of the facts about that night completely wrong.
Oh, really?
Yes. So over the years, the information had been misconstrued. The only thing I'm really confused about this story is that in every single article I read, even this one even the one that I read that talks about how Geraldine said a lot of people had it wrong, mm-hmm. all recalled that the skin of these creatures were metallic. But now the story changes where it's green. So this is like the story that sparked the fact that aliens were green. So like every cartoon you see of an alien that's green, this is the story that sparked it.
And they think that that was wrong. It was actually metallic.
So every article I read calls them metallic. But then even Geraldine says green. So I'm a little confused. So
Geraldine is saying
green.
Green. Yes. Okay. But like, I mean, they're green metal or like, you know, like.
Because they all the men were saying silvery metallic.
Interesting. You know what I'm thinking of? You know, like those old school like bugs.
Yeah.
That they kind of change color. They're metal.
Like a holographic is kind of greenish.
Yeah,
I guess,
it's like
and silver.
It, like, yeah, the base color's green, yeah. But really it's like metallic-y. Like yeah. Even the green of it is metallic-y.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what I
like
think
a hologra- of. Yeah, holographic. Yeah. I get it.
But that's what I picture when somebody says that, because I could see how people would be like, yeah, it was like green. And they're like, yeah. Oh, like green, and pick up something green and be like, no, because it was like metallic.
Metallic,
and
then
metallic
green.
Is
yeah.
What people cling on to, if okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because I feel like that's what I would think.
There you go. You just proved it.
All it took was a couple glasses of trash water.
Trash water. So because Geraldine was so upset about all the misinformation that she'd been hearing, in 2007, she published a book called Alien Legacy. And another book in 2015 called The Kelly Green Men, Alien Legacy Revisited. Have you read this? Her name is Geraldine Stith.
Crazy that, so Kelly Green is
it's Kelly, Kentucky.
That's but where is a happened. Color.
Is it?
So is it? Does it come from this? Is that the origination of that?
I don't know. I didn't even hear about that.
Kelly Green, like Kelly is, a color? Green is like a color. Yeah.
Then it might like be the Kelly Green aliens.
So when you said Kelly Green, I was like, wait.
Yeah, so... So this is, a lot of people call them the Kelly Green Men, the Kelly Green, or the Hopkinsville Goblins is another name.
Yeah. But so Kelly Green is just a shade of green.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Like here, I'll
go. It might be because of this then.
Like this is Kelly Green.
Oh yeah. That's probably
like it's a color.
Yeah. That looks like an alien color. Like when you see it, a green alien in a cartoon, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What color is Kelly Green? Kelly Green is an intense, pure green that sits between blue and yellow in the color wheel. Named after the common... Oh, no, it's actually named after an Irish family, Kelly.
Oh.
Because my mom's...
Not you, aliens.
My mom's name is Kelly, and her favorite color is green. So I just... But yeah, Kelly Green, who knew?
Who knew? So every third weekend of August, which is obviously...
Coming up.
Obviously the anniversary.
What's about to happen?
It's in Kentucky. In Kelly, Kentucky, there's a festival called Little Green Men Days Festival where they have arts and crafts, food, live music, and all things alien, like alien bounce houses, alien, just every alien mascots walking around.
I'm sure it's canceled because of coronavirus.
It is canceled.
And
I looked
it would
up.
Be irresponsible if we went
it's
regardless.
Canceled.
Can we go next year?
Yes.
For your birthday?
Yes.
That'll be your birthday trip?
Yes. Venmo me.
If everybody who listens sends me $2, I can take Amanda to the Kelly Green Festival.
But if you send us $6, we can go to Salem and the Kelly Green Festival.
Dude, that's fucking crazy.
So.
Oh my God, there's more.
Well, a little bit.
I'm excited.
I couldn't find any other like known sightings of these green men because I was like looking. But there's this website called weekinweird.com. where there's a paranormal investigator named Greg Newkirk. And in June 2012, he writes on his website, this is exactly from his website, "I was contacted by a frightened man who claimed that a group of small three-toed creatures were emerging from a mine shaft and terrorizing his rural Kentucky home. After sending us photographic evidence of the creatures and asking us to investigate the case, he eventually fled the property. The appearance of the creatures bore a striking resemblance to a well-documented case from 1955, during which a farmhouse in Hopkinsville, Kentucky was by goblins from outer space." What is that? Besigned?
Besieged.
Besieged. Sorry, don't know it.
Besieged, it's fine.
"Was besieged by goblins from outer space in an encounter that went down as being one of the most credible, well-documented cases of extraterrestrial contact. The Kentucky goblins had returned." Do you have something to say?
I'm just losing my mind because this is so cool.
So in this website, which you can literally look it up, it's weekinweird.com. I subscribed to it earlier today. He puts all the transcripts from their emails on the website. So in these emails, this man says that his daughter, like his young daughter, kept coming up to him saying, "Daddy, there's these hairless children that keep playing outside in the yard all the time."
Shut the fuck up.
She would say they're tiny, like they're like 3.5-4 feet tall, and they're bald, and they're always playing outside. And eventually him and his wife saw them too. And all the emails, I didn't want to get into it because it's, you know, there's tons of emails, but they're all typed out in full on the website and you can read them on there. So that's the case of the Hopkinsville goblins or the Kelly Green men.
Dude, what the fuck? That was amazing.
You're flipping out.
Because that is so convincing to me. Is it not to you?
Well, this is the interesting thing I find about it is that, so this was in 1955. You can literally Google this and like all the newspaper articles will pop up where people are like, aliens spotted in Kentucky and green men, blah, blah, blah. And the really big UFO alien encounter I did with Barney and Betty Hill was what, 15 years later or 10 years later?
10 years. Yeah. It was in the 60s.
But that is like, it's like, I think it was like 1964 or something. But that one is like the most well-known, and this one is pretty well-known too, because like they say that this is the one that made it, like this is the story that made people think that aliens were like little green men, and that apparently this is the story that Spielberg made E.T. based after.
I'm googling the Roswell incident.
That was way before. That was 1950, right?
I'm trying to check because I can't remember. I always act like I remember and I can't, obviously.
Which is another big one that we have to do.
A TV show fucking called Roswell. It's fucking up my hole.
1947. I got it. Don't worry.
Okay. So that was like the first.
That was the very first one. Like that's the biggest one.
People lost their goddamn mind. That was like the big UFO one. Damn, that was fucking crazy, dude. So like to me when I hear that, it makes me think, you know, this guy sees them all these years later. Mm-hmm. What if they came and they stayed?
And went where?
They were in this mine shaft.
Oh, yeah, probably.
And they were just chilling, investigating the human race. And they rely on human beings' narcissism that we're the only things that exist, intelligent things that exist, to be like, yeah, whatever, we can be seen. It doesn't even really fucking matter because everyone's going to discount it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, we're so narcissistic as a species.
Dude, there are too many fucking UFO sightings in this world for there not to be some form of life on another planet.
It's so obvious. It's so obvious. And it's so narcissistic to think we're the only ones here.
Yeah, I agree.
And there's so much evidence. Like, that's looking why I love
cryptids and aliens. And I love it. I fucking love it.
It's so cool. That was such a good story. So cool. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you. You're hyping me up right now.
Because
I thought it was a throwaway. Awesome. I was like,
girl, you've been on fire. Like the last couple of weeks, your stories have been really interesting.
That makes me feel good because I was really nervous about this one. I was like,
No, you absolutely killed it.
It's like
kind of
short. Like, so I was like, I didn't
really last week, I've been obsessed with it ever since.
Aaron Valenti. That was a pretty good
Googling,
one.
Going on Twitter, everything.
Yeah.
Your Titanic episode.
Titanic was
game changer. Yeah. I'm sorry. You've been absolutely killing it lately.
It's because I'm trying to channel you. Because I really am. I'm like, I want to make sure that I do interesting things because like you always like know the cool government shit and the conspiracies and like all the shit. So I'm like, I want to be cool. Like I want to know cool shit.
You've been absolutely killing it. I mean, the thing that like blew me away about this story is I had like a couple flashes like where you were like, oh, the hand came down.
Yeah.
Where I was like, I feel like I've heard this, but you had so many details to it that I did not know.
There's like not
how many people were there, that there were kids, that she was like this really strict religious woman. Yeah. No drugs or alcohol were happening.
So I only learned that because Geraldine Stith, who is the granddaughter of Glennie, has a YouTube channel where she just sits in her like office and just talks about this day.
What's it called?
You just type in Geraldine Stith and she pops
right there.
Yeah.
Nice. All right.
So I literally watched all her videos and she was like, yeah, like people, like she just talks into her camera and it's like not even good quality. And she's like, yeah, like people would try to say that we were like my family was on drugs and alcohol, but like my grandma didn't allow alcohol on her property.
Well, that's like such
so that's
a,
how I got all that information.
That's such like a stereotype of like Southern or like redneck people coming from like a redneck home, as yeah. I said earlier. Like, so to me, I definitely understand like that stigma of like, yeah. oh, you're from a small town. You're like a redneck family. Yeah. How, you're probably on drugs and drinking. You're like the wonderful whites.
I think someone even said like, oh, it was probably the Kentucky moonshine or yep. whatever.
And it's like, you know what? No, that's not necessarily true because, yeah. I mean, my family
was religious.
We're super religious. Yeah. We're totally the black sheeps of like our family because we drink and yeah. are, have more liberal views, you know? Like yeah. my dad is this total outlier.
Mixologist.
You know?
Jay, he's the mixologist.
I would love if Jay would start an Instagram where he just makes cocktails because his cocktails are amazing. I think people would love it.
Do it.
Personally.
Jay.
And wow, the Kelly Green thing. That just, that made me laugh. But
it has to have something to do with it.
It has to, dude. It has to. I just think that's crazy.
Because there's literally a festival, Kelly Green Day.
I want to go so bad.
It looks really fun, actually. I was looking at pictures, and it's like everything is alien themed, like the alien bounce house and the alien.
All right, I'm whatever. Speaking it into existence. We're going next year for your birthday because it's yours and Kate's birthday.
Yeah,
Kate loves aliens too.
Hell yeah.
Kate, text me when you hear this.
I literally looked
down,
it up.
Let's go.
I looked it up on the website, and they were like, "The festival's canceled this year." I was like, ah.
"Dude, I'm down. I don't care. I'll pay. I'll put it on a credit card." I love being in debt because I'm an American.
That's right.
That's right, baby. You have a listener story, right?
I do. So this story is from our friend Marilyn. Remember Marilyn?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Thank you, Marilyn, for being a listener. We love you.
She's the best. So she emailed us this. So I'll just read it. My heartwarming ghost story.
Oh, okay, so it's cute. A happy one. I already love it. Let's do it.
Hi, girls. When I listened to you last episode, the 15th special, I knew I needed to send you my ghost story. Don't worry, Amanda. It's not scary. Sorry, Cassidy. Haha.
God, I love her so much.
know. Okay, so this story goes back to the year 2000. That was the year my grandma died. Her name was Maggie, and we were very close. As soon as her soul left her body, I felt her with me always. She would always let me know she was with me. Just little things that would catch my attention. I'm not sure if you know this, but spirits like to leave coins to let you know they are near.
I have heard that before, actually.
I didn't even know that. So Marilyn says, I always find dimes everywhere, in weird places, like inside my makeup bag, inside my pajama drawer, in a box, in a corner. I just always find them. Anyway, in 2005, I was going through a horrible time in my life. I was having horrific family problems. Don't want to get into the detail about that. But anyway, I was in a bad place. There was a lot of pain in my life. So I had this photo of her from when she was young that always sat on my mantle. It's one of those old black and white photos that they used to hand color. You know that kind, right? It was taken in the late 1930s. I still have it. Now it hangs in my dining room. Okay, so this photo of her was on my mantle, and one night I glanced at it as I walked by, and I swear her face became animated. It was three-dimensional, like she was actually there and looking at me. Of course, this scared the shit out of me, and I thought I was hallucinating. I was under a lot of stress, and I just shrugged it off, thinking my mind was playing tricks on me. Then a few days later, she did it again, but this time, her mouth in the photo was moving like she was speaking. I couldn't hear her speaking, but she was mouthing something. I have no idea what. Okay, so now I think I'm really bonkers, but I shrugged it off again. A couple of days later, my friend came over for a visit, and she says to me very calmly, "There's an old lady in your kitchen." I said, "Oh my God, what is she doing?" And she said, "She's cooking." I said, "Wait right here for a second." And I ran to get my grandma's photo from the mantle. I came back with it and I asked if this was the old woman cooking in my kitchen. And she said, "Yep, that's
Amanda,
her.
I'm fucking geeking. I'm about to cry."
I know. I'm getting really shivery
too. I'm literally tearing up. This is fucking nuts. Oh my God.
I knew it. My grandma, my friend, could not communicate with spirits, but could see them, which I had forgot about at the time. I didn't see anything in the kitchen, but I wish I had. This warmed my heart knowing she was there. A few days later, I was home alone in my kitchen making a sandwich. Oh, why am I getting all like chilly? Like I'm getting chills. I was in my kitchen alone making a sandwich, and I turned to put the stuff back in the fridge. And when I turned back around to get my sandwich, there were finger marks in my bread. Not just little indentations either. We're talking about all the way through the bread. I know it was her letting me know that she was near. In a weird way, it got my attention, but it worked. Her photo doesn't reanimate anymore, but I still get a fuzzy feeling when I look at it. So for now, I am content finding dimes in weird places and finger marks in my bread. Love you, girls. You keep me company on my early drives to work in the dark. So spooky. Love, Marilyn.
Oh, you're crying! Because that's so sweet.
I literally just looked up and Cassidy is full on crying.
That's so sweet.
It was really sweet. I got chills all over my body when I was reading that.
So happy for her that she gets to experience. I mean, I know it, like, I feel like I talk about this all the time, but it's like, dude, my friend died, like,
I know,
in March, and it's been really hard and it's been really sad. And so the idea that people are still there and like looking out for you and having your back.
Oh, 100%. Cassie, this is why we do this kind of podcast.
It just feels good, you know?
Yeah.
It does. It feels good.
And one day you and I are going to have either like a psychic medium or...
I thought you were going to say, and one day we're going to haunt each other. And I was like, true.
That too. We're going to haunt each other 100%.
I would absolutely love that.
Or maybe the tarot card readings can do something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll definitely do something.
Marilyn, that fucking story was amazing. That was really sweet.
Cassie does not cry very often.
No, I do not.
And she is full on crying.
That made me really happy to hear that. Because that's really sweet. And also, I feel like I could picture it. I feel like I could be in my head and, like, picture just, like, making a sandwich. And
I mean, I would probably poop, personally.
I just think it's so sweet. And
it is very sweet.
Thank you for sending us stuff like that, because we really do love to hear it.
I know.
Like, that made my night.
I like the heartwarming stories, personally.
I love that she said, sorry, Cassidy.
I know. Funny. Well, because you want all the scary ones.
I do, but I obviously am a softie for the sweet ones, too.
I know. I loved it.
It was very cute. Marilyn.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you for being a listener, because we know. We've seen you.
She's the one that made the koozies, remember?
Yeah, we fucking love her.
I know.
Does she have an Instagram that we can promote?
She does. I think I've sent you this before. Do you know those spooky Halloween porcelain dolls? The Boneyard Babes?
Wait, that's her.
That's her. She does the sickest, like, porcelain doll. She basically takes regular porcelain dolls, like normal ones, and she gives them a completely spooky Halloween makeover. And they're so cool.
So go follow Boneyard_Babes on Instagram. Oh my god, yeah, this shit's so cool.
It's so cool.
Spooky. Oh, look at this Day of the Dead one she did.
I know. Like, yeah. She's so talented. Actually, like, I've been getting, like, a lot of cool, like, texts and stories and phone calls from people just telling me, like, the craziest shit due to this podcast. And it makes me super excited. And I'm, like, super excited to, like, start diving into some of those new topics I've been learning.
Like, I'm super interested in the science part of all this and, like, the science side of it. Amanda's super interested in, like, all of the spiritual. Like, spiritual side of it. And so we're not gonna judge you. We're here because we're interested. If you
this
have found
a safe this, place
exactly we want you to know this is a very safe place and that we are interested. We'll never make fun of you. We'll literally never talk shit about,
you know,
any experience you've ever had.
You can even make fun of us and we won't even make fun of you back. I don't know. I guess I really just love the fact that, because I feel like I do try to be like my authentic self in everyday life, but obviously sometimes you can't be, or it's hard to be, or I don't know, maybe you just like don't show people your full self all the time. And I feel like this podcast has had so many people, even that I've known for years, reach out to me and kind of be able to know me now. Does that make sense?
No, totally. I'm so glad, because that's how I want people to feel. I want people to find this podcast and like, I was like born a skeptic. I even feel skeptical about stuff I've experienced.
That's really weird that you say that, because you, I feel like, are the one that like has taught me to be more open-minded about these kinds of things,
because that's my base emotion, is to be skeptical, and I want to be wrong, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
my base emotion when I hear anything, like even when I was editing our episode where I heard a ghost voice on the episode,
oh my god, every day
my brain was like, well, maybe it was just Amanda breathing weird right into the mic. Like, my brain immediately is skeptical. I would like to be wrong because I want to think there's more to this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to think there's more to this.
I mean, you know me, I fully believe in all of this, and I have a husband who believes in absolutely none of it. And I mean, we still get along very well, but I wish there was a way for me to just like prove it sometimes. Like, I'm like, I know, I just fucking know that this shit is real. I know it.
We both just exhale.
I know. We're crying. We're getting existential. Listen, here.
I'll cry whenever. Just send me stories like Marilyn's. It's seriously. Fine.
Seriously, send more stories like that. That was great.
Please. Thank you guys so much. Make sure you find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, our Patreon. We have 3, about to be 4 episodes. We're going to have a bonus episode all about Scientology posting very soon. So if you're interested in that, the dollar menu doesn't exist anymore. So $2 is literally one thing on the dollar menu, unfortunately.
Yeah. A McChicken?
Yeah.
Patreon.
Make sure you keep your front door locked.
Your mind open.
And keep drinking the Kool-Aid.
Bye. Do you believe in ghosts?
2 Twisted Humans. This is the podcast where 2 best friends chat true crime and have a glass
or 2
of wine. I'm Alicia.
And I'm Caitlin.
And this is Twisted and Uncorked.
So join us every week for Casual Tuesdays, where we release a new episode.
We are now available on all platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play. Rate, review, and subscribe.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, gosh darn.
Oh, gosh. Spooky stuff.
I'm drinking your trash wine. I'm so sorry.
Please drink the trash wine.
It looks like garbage water even because we added the Coke.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Please drink it.
I know I say to me so much. As I edit these episodes, I realize I'm always like, to me. I'm so obnoxious. But to me when I hear that. So make sure you keep your mind open.
Venmo me. I'm just kidding.
Amanda!
I'm sorry. You know I had to say it.
Stop the presses. Amanda's got a burp. If the Kissing Booth won an Oscar before Halloween Town, I will riot in the streets.
They wouldn't.
It's just fucking rosé.
I can't even tell.
It's like fucking poison, man.
Yeah, I know. I'm dreading taking a sip.
But we can't stop.
I know.
We're in too deep.